young people like me to know what our grandparents went through, you know. So it's good to hear all of those stories.
You're going to have fun with us then. We had a lot of, you know, we didn't do bad things, but we had a lot of fun doing things.
Crazy stuff.
And you know what? I'm hot here in this area because that was my, when I was young, I used to, you know, go fishing and catch fish for the family, yeah. So I dive deep water, so, you know, I punch on my ear on my left side, so I got to apologize if I don't hear you folks right.
I'll
leave. I might say funny things sometime, you know, deep in anyone.
Nobody knows.
And the other thing is to try not to make extra noise, you know, like we need to
with
just keep our hands off. And
this is like, when you talk to this, it's like talking to somebody's ear.
Oh.
So if you do this, I'll go. So can I just start off and ask you for your full name? Okay,
yeah.
And just introduce yourself. Say, I am.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I am George Fujiwara.
Oh.
Born in Kilauea Camp, right below Lahaina Luna School. I grew up there, and then moved to Honokoai, Kanapali Power Plant, we call it, below Pokoli Camp, you know. And I went to Honokoai School from there, and then to Lahaina Luna School.
We're going to have to get spellings from you after this, I think. I won't be able to write all that down. Thank you. Okay.
I'll make them short.
Oh, would you also say, is it okay if you say your age, too? So.
Oh, I was born April the 18th, 1924. I'm 80 years old this year.
Congratulations.
Nice to be 80. You folks don't know, 80 is a good year to live, to be alive, to be 80 years old. So.
My name is Richard Nagamini. I was born in Wailuku but moved to Westside, Lahaina, and lived here all my life, and live in Kilauea where he used to live to, you know, same area. And I'm 75 years old, born 1929, August. And I had good times, although we didn't have money. But today, it's money talk.
What does that mean, money talk?
You have to get money to go places. Before, you don't have to get anything. You can go up the mountain, you can go down to the beach, enjoy life. All kind of things you do without money. Well, and the famous word used to be kapu. You go up in a mountain, you see a nice mango, you say kapu. That's yours, nobody take that. I don't know why, but the word kapu was very much what you call the respect. When you say kapu, that's yours. Go in a river, you see a goldfish, you say kapu. Whether you can catch the fish or not, was fun those days. Going up the mountain, eat guava, mango, cactus plant, panini. And, you know, as far as food, we had plenty to eat because I had a lot of fruits then. Today, you cannot go up the mountain. They forbid you to go up the mountain.
My name is Pedro Kiguchi. I was born January 22nd, 1921. So I am 83 years old. I lived in Pokoli for 49 years. That's about 7 miles away, north of Lahaina. And I spent most of my young days up there. We used to go up the way he said, I went up the mountains, down the beach. Especially we used to go down the beach. We used to take the rice ball and nothing else. And we went down, catch fish, spear fish, and used to cook them and eat them together with the, you know, with the rice. And we used to pick seaweed and bring it home for the family because that was very good for everybody wanted to, you know. And I graduated from Pokoli School. That's a village about 7 miles from here, and we had a big community, about over 1,000 people. We had a public school from kindergarten up to eighth grade. And we had a Catholic church, a Methodist church, a Buddhist church, and we even had a Japanese language school prior to the 19, when we had the World War II. And after that, I went to Lion Luna, and I graduated in 1940. And after that, I've been working for Pioneer Mill for 42 years, and I retired in 1983.
Can I ask how old you are?
Pardon me?
How old are you?
I'm 83 years old.
And I noticed, can you describe the hat you're wearing?
That's the ILW, that's the International Longshore and Warehouse Union. Well, the sugar workers were allowed to join the ILW just before 1946, I think. And after we organized the union, we had a big strike in 1946 that lasted about 3 months. We had a lot of cooperation from all the workers, all different nationalities, Japanese, Filipinos, Portuguese, and whatever. And we used to have committees. You know, we used to get a committee to take care of the fish that go down the ocean to catch fish. We used to have a garden committee. They used to go up to Kula, help the farmers, and the farmers used to give us the vegetables that they couldn't sell and bring it home. And we had a real soup kitchen. And occasionally, some of them cook their own food and bring it to the soup kitchen to share with other people. Sometimes you gotta watch because they mix the regular meat and dog meat, you know. And you don't know if you ate the dog food. After that, they're going to say, woo, 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 woo. So after you eat it, it was tastes good. So, you know, we didn't mind, but the taste is about the same with the regular meat. But I know I ate even donkey meat, you know, the jerkin, you know, that's out in the field. And we didn't mind it because food is food there, as long as you know what it is. But they tell you after you eat it, then they tell you, oh, that's, oh, whoa.
You were talking about the different ethnicities working together on the strike. What do you remember about how the different ethnicities got along before the union?
Well, especially in our camp.
Oh, hold on a sec, he's going to go take a call.
We had all kind of nationalities. Yeah. We all got together because we didn't get along, yeah? Because there was some occasion, but usually we all worked together, even after the strike and before the strike, because we worked in all different departments in the field. And, you got to get gotta know each other so that you can do a better job. Yeah? So I think we didn't have any problem with the ethnic groups.
People didn't fight with each other?
I seldom. We didn't have much trouble with fighting among those different ethnic groups.
What about during your father's time?
Pardon me?
How about during your father's time?
Yeah, even my father's time. My father came from Japan. And he worked in a plantation, and they didn't have any problems, actually, because they can speak more only Japanese, huh? And they used to learn a little Pidgin English to explain to the boss that what this and this. So I think, as a whole, we didn't have any problems as far as ethnic groups are concerned.
Because what I understand is that sometimes management would pit the ethnic groups against each other and have them compete against each other.
Well, I didn't notice anything like that, you know, while I was growing up. Because we used to live in a big camp. We used to have camps separated. Yeah, to have Japanese group here, Chinese group there, a Filipino group, and Caucasians all one, and the supervisors all one section. So that didn't have much, you know. But we used to mingle together because we play sports and everything. You know, the kids, eh?
What kind of sports?
Oh, we used to play basketball. You know, we used to have a big, Maui County had an Alexander House. They call it the Alexander House. And they sponsor all the sports on Maui, you know. And we were under their group. And we used to have all different weights, you know, especially basketball. They used to go by the weight, you know. They used to get 85 pounds, 100 pounds, 120 pounds, and the beginners league. And we used to play against all different camps. We used to have Honolulu come up to Pukuli play, or we go down to Honolulu play. Then after that, we come down to Lahaina and play all the teams from Lahaina, Kilauea, Crossroad, Kuhua. All the camps, they have their own team. And we used to challenge each other. And it was really competitive, and we really enjoyed it. That's the only way we were out, get out of mischief. So,
what kind of mischief?
We didn't have much trouble.
No more. Oh, wait. Come on! No, he more. Said get out of mischief.
No. Right, that's a regular slang of when you say you have some kind of. We didn't have it because. Those days we didn't have drugs. We didn't have, most of them never smoked, you know. And
you didn't drink?
Well, drink some people did, but not to the extreme, yeah. Because we didn't have any bars, liquor bars up Pukuli. The only way you can get go to a liquor, you have to come down to Lahaina. And those days, transportation was a problem because not too many people had cars those days. You missed a car at night, you gotta walk home.
Do you remember how you learned about the ILWU and how you became a member?
Well, you ask him because he's a more active member from the ILWU.
But I'm thinking about when they were organizing before the 1946 strike, when the union first formed, how did you become a member?
Well, we were automatically, because they wanted all the sugar workers to join the ILWU. And we were willing to join because, you know, the conditions were not so good as we wanted. We wanted some pension plan, wage increase. So when they brought that up, when the union, they started to organize, we were all willing to join the ILWU. So he's one of the officers from the...
Yeah, but later on.
Yeah, that's okay, but... Okay.
And okay. Can you also describe, you were talking about the conditions weren't so great. So what were the different ways that you would try to make it? How did you deal with those working conditions? Did you try to work slower, or sometimes you didn't show up for work, or?
No. You mean the LW?
No. When you were working on the plantations.
Well, we did a normal day's work. We didn't try to cut short anything. We just go as we always do, because that's going to be our livelihood, right?
I used to work in a wood products mill in Oregon, and so we were non-union. And sometimes I felt like it was easier to work for non-union, and then later on we had a union, and it was harder work because they made you do a lot more, you know? So I don't, was there a change between when there was a union and then not union?
I don't think so, because it was better that we have a union, because, you know, we have a grievance committee. So if you have any problems in the department, you have your stewards to go and negotiate your problem. So I think it was a win-win-win situation.
Did you have lunas at the mill? I mean, is that a term just for the fields?
Or? No, the whole plantation was ILW. Even the, I think the clerks had their own ILW, but different, you know.
So before the union, how did you deal with grievances?
Well, we couldn't. The boss was the boss. The boss said, this is this. You know, you don't have any say-so.
Did anybody try?
No, I don't think so.
So if you had problems?
Yeah, they always win.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Or?
Well, can talk about...
Oh, can you come in? Because could you sit here? I don't know what happened.
No, he went back. He's coming back.
Oh, okay. All right.
Anyway, the way the ILW was brought up, the way I understand, I was young yet, they had to hide, go house to house to organize the union, because they cannot stay one place, because this from the employer looking for these people.
I'm going to ask you to take off your jacket, because I'm getting sounds like a train.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I really want to be able to use what you're saying, because it's very good.
You want to show the shirt.
Ah, what's this?
Ed Case.
Ah.
That's my man.
Okay, so can you start again about the union?
Well, before they organized, they had to get in groups, go house to house, because they cannot stay one place. And if they get caught, they would be fired. So it was a rough time for the organizers, the way I understand. Because if they know you, one of the organizers, they will fire you out. There's no union to support you then. But once the union got in, as far as what you have to do, like you say, you have to do more things, they had a contract. Each people, depend on what their job is, they have a job description. You don't do more than that. So the union was good for the working people.
Were there scabs during the strike?
Oh, yeah. They had few. But gradually, they turned.
Who were the scabs? Who worked?
I really don't know. At my time, 58, I didn't have any scabs. But the early, you know, when they first started, they had scabs, and then because the company runs everything, they told the supervisors to go out in the field and work. That's where they had the fight. Some people went to jail. I think you remember that.
No.
Did people go to jail?
Not me.
Not him, but some people went to jail. Went to jail and out, they come because the union take them out. And I noticed, after the union came in the picture, the whole things changed. We had the Democrat Party, we had the union, and the Democrat Party and the union made Hawaii what it is today. We are far above a lot of places that, you know, didn't have union. I might be wrong, but I think I'm right on that.
Can you describe what you mean by that, that it's Hawaii what it is today?
Cost of living. You see, before the union started, people didn't have cars. People didn't own homes. After that, they own homes. They have cars. They send the kids to college. Big difference.
You described that when you were a kid during the strike, that the union really provided a lot, and you described that too.
Yeah, you know, for those that was going to school, every child had meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And the lunch was not cold, it's hot food they bring to the school or to a place where they gather, the union people, so they can have good meal. After work, after, you know, everything is done, the family goes down to the soup kitchen and have their meal. And in 58 strike, we had so much fish, the avivil, the veke, and they catch them by the ton to supply the strikers. You know, we go to the soup kitchen and had lots of veke and avivil. We had plenty to eat.
How hard was it to convince people to go on strike?
Not very hard. I don't think so. They both, you know, before the strike, they explain to the workers, we're fighting for this. And then, because the company is not giving in, we have to strike. So they all vote, and, you know, not usually it's not 100%. But still yet, when they strike, they have soup kitchen for all them. Like nowadays, when they strike, the union give them money, I think, but all time, for soup kitchen, where they can cut costs, feed the people with less money. And we had a lot of vegetables from the farmers. We also had beef from the farmers, because the workers went up country to help build that place for the cattle, you know, to slaughter the cattle, and they would give you a whole cow. And all those who went up Kula to work, oh boy, I was a camp chairman. I used to take people, you know, send people from my area to go up Kula. And the Kula farmers were so happy with these people. After strike, they gave them extra things. I don't know what, but they gave them something good. Yeah. And coming home, you know, for the day, they gave them extra vegetables for them to keep, but the rest goes to the soup kitchen.
So you said not 100% when people vote to go on strike. What were some of the fears? Do you want to talk about some, maybe, you know, losing jobs? Would they win, you know? Because they're really...
Well, you know, you cannot get 100% anything. But when the strike goes on, they have to participate, whether they didn't vote for it, you know.
Why would somebody not vote for it?
I don't know. I cannot tell you.
Can you tell me?
What's that?
Why would somebody not vote for it to go on strike?
Well, they call it stubborn. And they don't see the bright part of what we are doing, what the union is doing to help the coming people, yeah? So I don't know, because some of them are real hard-headed. They don't see the picture like most of them did, you know, because the union brought a lot of improvement in our life, you know.
Can you describe what the working conditions were before the strike?
Well,
like what kind of, you know, how long you worked, what type, you know.
We used to work 8 hours, and the only thing was that the pay was so small, you know. And, there wasn't any extra hardship, but, you know, you gotta get somebody to back you up if you get into trouble.
Well, I mean, like, was there break time, lunch time? Did they provide, you know, did they charge you for gloves? You know what I mean?
Oh, no. You, everything, equipment, you buy your own. But...
Well, can you tell me, like, what you, you know, what kind of things you had to buy? And if you had breaks and things like that?
Well, because you have to buy your own glove, right? And... you buy the tools from the company. You don't buy the, you know, outside. So, you know, you get them a little cheaper. But, well, as when time went by, you just, you know, get better conditions that we don't have to buy it anymore, yeah.
Oh, so, okay. I just remember when, you know, I was working, we had 20-minute breaks every 4 hours. We had, you know, an hour lunch or a half-hour lunch or, you know what I mean?
No, we didn't have any breaks.
Before the union or after?
Even after union.
Oh, we had breaks. Yeah. 5-minute breaks.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember.
Coca-Cola break. You know, not smoke break. People go and have drink, and they take more than 5 minutes, but they had breaks.
But what about before
the union? It's not in a contract, but they just go and, you know, the boss won't bother you.
What about before the union?
Before the union, I don't know. Before the union, you can do anything. Yeah. My parents worked long hours. Their son, you know, from in the morning to sundown, they worked. And they walked to work. Some areas they catch a truck. But those days, I mean, the hours was long, the pay was small. They used to get free kerosene, free firewood, and free house and medical, I think. Medical was real cheap then. Those days, plantation medical was the best, not today.
What about safety issues?
No safety things, not until after the union came in the picture.
People get hurt a lot?
Oh, yeah. People get hurt.
Were there types of, were there injuries and things?
No, not that I, well, most of them is back problem, yeah? You know, heavy, building up heavy things. And, well, that's more about the common accident that we have, yeah. Because everybody, as much as possible, they don't want to get hurt, you know. So they try their best to prevent those things.
You have some pictures here. You want to show us what that is and describe what these pictures are?
Oh, this is harvesting. See, you see the crane? See the big grab? They pick up the cane. And they put it in the, you see the cars on the side? And the ladies, you know, back.
Are those women there?
Yeah, women.
What are they doing?
Yeah, you see. Well, you know, after the cranes pick up, and they have some little leftovers, small, they just cut them and put them in the front so that they don't get anything left back, yeah? And this.
When were these taken?
Oh, that's also about, you know, 40s, I think.
And what's that?
This is called a rake. You know, they rake all the cane together so that the crane can lift it up and put them in the car. I used to drive one of these rakes.
And that's the cane there?
Yeah. And this is the ladies that are working on the behind the crane.
And what do they do?
That's the one that cut the cane and, you know, threw it. The one that's left over after the crane lifted.
Are they behind the crane or in front of the crane?
Right in front of the crane.
Yeah, because I did a job, something like this. As soon as the grab picks up the load, you go right in front and cut and throw it, you know, front, so that grab can pick it up. That's no safety. Yeah. You know, the grab comes right, and how big the grab might be.
Well, with the grab, what's that?
That's this.
Is that the name of the machine?
No, this is a crane. This is the grab. What do you call that? The grab.
Like a claw?
Yeah, the claw.
Yeah, like she opened up.
Yeah. And what happened is that, you know, the operator got to be real good. They swing that thing, land about a foot away. After the unit came, there's no such thing, somebody in the front for safety purpose.
So it was kind of dangerous, huh?
Oh, it was dangerous. But we never think it was dangerous.
Well, let's take a little break here because I think some ladies, yeah. Are they in the bathroom?
They went to the bathroom.
Okay, well, I can ask a couple more questions.
If they
Can you describe what your housing like was when you were young? Like, what was the housing and living conditions that your parents lived in when you were being born?
Well, the houses were real nice houses. They have 2-3 bedrooms. But the only thing is that they had an outhouse outside there. You know, you could, well, some of the houses, they had some in the house, but most majority of them used to have the outhouse outside as a disadvantage, of, you know. And the houses were really good because they come to repair your house when you ask, with all certain pages, something wrong.
Not all the time. Not all the time. Because I went with one of my officers into that and meet the manager. This was in Lahaina Pump. The parents had a baby. And they had a big hole in that bedroom. And we telling John Schirmer, the manager, gotta fix that. You know, the person goes, cannot. But my friend and I went and talked. And he told them, if anything happened to the baby, we're going to turn around and sue you. So next day, that thing was fixed. Garcia House.
So the union had to go and check on the camp houses too?
No. The people tell them, you know, what kind of problem they have.
Okay. But I mean, the union would take care of that.
Well, go and talk to the management.
Okay. So there were houses that were not so good.
No. Not all the houses good.
Yeah.
But the new ones are good.
Were there, was there running water and stuff too?
Yeah, had running water.
I think some ladies are coming in, so
yeah.
Let's take a little bit of a break.
Yeah,
and get some food. Can I, about the bathrooms? Or
well, we used to have a public bathhouse right about in the center of the community, at Pukuli. It was a big, just as big as this room. They used to get the ladies' room, ladies' bathroom, the men's, and they used to get one for the Filipinos. And the top was cement, made of cement, and about 6 feet, six feet deep, and about size of this table, and about double of this. And, you know, they have somebody to make the hot water every day. And
hold on a sec. Let's wait for you. Okay. Oh, drink something. Go ahead. Okay.
And we used to get they have doors between the two.
They're all coming around here, so hold on a sec.
Sorry.
It's okay.
He must start it all jammed up.
Take a
okay, so anyway, they had a real partition on all of those.
He's telling us about the public baths
three,
and how
three,
boys used to peek.
Three, and they used to get a little door, ordinary door on the end of, and they used to make a little hole here and there, you know. So they go around and look. And they, sometimes they shoot water in you. But what this happened, this is true, see. This boy was looking, you know. And the father come from the back and said, "Hey, son, where's the bucket?"
I don't get it.
You don't get it? No. Because the son was looking, peeping, and the father came on the back and he said, because he wanted to use the bucket for take a bath. And when he turned back, he saw the father, he got all shook up. But anyway, there were a lot of holes around here and there where they can, but I didn't do it.
How were the baths segregated? You said something about...
Well, they were big walls with galvanized, you know.
But there were separate baths for ladies?
Yeah.
On a petition.
You said ladies, men, and Filipinos.
They had all different rooms, you know, all separated by partition.
So the Filipinos were in a different one than the Japanese?
No, the same thing, but that just separated from the other one, so that, you know. Sometimes when we are not there, when some Filipino girls come instead of bed at night there, we used to go around and go people. Well, Kolohe, we just we had a lot of fun. Just.
You know what?
Oh, can you start again?
They're bad, just like one swimming pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, underneath, I think the water all the same was. You can feel the girl underneath or boys underneath, from underneath get puka and because the water go back and forth, you know. It was fun to go Pukuli, take a bath. But where I live, we're a central power plant, we had all individual tabia. We were more modern. But you know, always young time, you Kolohe, you know the way you always peep, and you're peeping, and the girl come peep too, and you two eyes meet together, and you say, oh. So the girls used to peep on the boys too. Yeah, those camp days were a lot of fun. Everybody, you know, so innocent, yeah. But you know, just for fun, they used to do that. Yeah.
So the girls peep too.
Yeah, the girls
oh,
too.
Yeah.
Because your eyes meet, there's something about a hole, you know, when you come, look, you see one eye over there, and the girl peeping too.
I was just wondering what courtship was like in the camps. Was there courtship?
What's that?
I mean, you know, how did boys and girls get together? You know, fall in love, that kind of thing.
Oh,
can you lean a little bit? Oh, you know what? Maybe we should wait till everybody, but I want to know about how, you know, men and women fell in love and got married and that kind of thing.
Only Fred married the same camp girl over here. But to us, you know, we're just like family. Or like the girls come to your house, you know, just like your sister or whatever. They come play with your sister, yeah. We're so innocent too. And then when I grew up, I was about almost 18 years old. Never had a girlfriend. Never thought of having a girlfriend when we were young. You know, we always were so busy playing sports, you know, all day, so, you know, because they all finish high school, the girls go to, you know, Honolulu, go work or something, you know, and so all gays. I never had a date till I was about 20 years old, I think. Yeah, you know, busy playing sports. But that one, I met him when I was 80 years ago, so, you know, I was 72 years old. But I was married before that, and three children, and And when I first married my first wife, because I was just an electrician, and she was a professional woman, she was a registered nurse, the whole town talked about me. How come that electrician, he married a kind, you know, professional woman? You know who told me? My good friend. You mind if I mention a name or what? He marked it already, so. That guy, you know, Kaku, eh? Ginoza.
Oh, yeah.
Him, the guy come tell me, you know, Georgia, all talking about it. Yeah, which guy talking about me, you know? I'll punch him in the mouth, you know? And he tell me because I married, you know, a nurse and I'm an electrician, I'm supposed to be a, you know, ditch digger, maybe something, I don't know, but they put us way down, yeah? You married those days, you know? School teachers, they don't talk to you them days. They're socialized by themselves, you know? Kind of segregated, educated people and non-educated people. So that's how we grew up. And
tell about the games you guys used to play when you went to Pukuli and had fights all the time.
Yeah, we used to get
football.
We used to go Pukuli play football, you know, with we go school. Eh? Hey, you gotta play football this weekend, okay? You know, no more shoulder pads, just, you know, or go like this. We used to come home with all broken shirt and everything. Every time we go play Pukuli, every time they lose, they put big guy. And, you know, Fred guy, the older than us, you know. And powder game, we got to fight. And all Fred guys chase us. They hit us stone. We used to run down the hill, go back, you know. We come up there, Honokohai, you know, and Kanapali, yeah. We used to go. And that was part of the fun. And we still go up there and play with them, challenge. We go Honolulu, challenge with Honolulu boys. Basketball too, same thing. And Pukuli, they get such a big camp, so they get, you know, a lot of boys, so, you know. We cannot beat them because they put all the boys inside. Every time we, you know, we're winning. And I find out when I got older, they're older than me. Even the one we're beating, older than us. Oh, Ali guys, oh, Pino guys, they're older than me, but we play with them and we're beating them. But, you know, like Fred guys, all the big boss up there, all that pull. Hey, you go inside. All the big guys pull inside. But Fred kind of play because he played for line, you know. He was a star line, you know.
Is that true?
What?
You were a star?
Well, my friend and I, from Pukuli, we used to catch the bus, come to school in the morning. And after school, we stayed over, we practiced up the hill. And we used to come down, after practice, we come down to the border department and take a shower, cold shower, because they didn't have any hot water. So after that, we walk down to Lahaina. And from Lahaina, we walk all the way up to Pukuli, every night, as that's about 7 miles away. So I was just wondering if they had that 2.0 grade point at that time, I would have made it, because we didn't have time to study. Come home so late, tired. Yeah? So I'm very fortunate that they didn't have the 2.0 at that time. But anyway. After that, after football season, the main game that we wanted to win was the fair game. That's the real rivalry between Lahaina Luna and Maui High School. And just happened that day, that year, my friend and I, both from Pukuli, scored all the points, 25 points that day. He made 3 touchdowns and I made 1. So it was a Pukuli day. But anyway, at the end of the season, he and I were selected for the All-Star team. Then during the track season, I used to run the sprints and I was the captain of the track team. But we used to, same thing, we had to walk home. Those days, you can count the cars that, you know, pass on the road, but anyway, it was fun while it lasted. But after high school, I started working for the plantation, and for 42 years.
Were these high school team always called the Lunas?
Pardon me?
Were they always called Lunas?
Yeah, Lahaina Luna Lunas, Lahaina Luna.
Why are they called Lunas?
Because the end of the Lahaina Luna.
Just sounded good?
Just short. Lunas.
Okay.
That's interesting.
Do
you
want to
gather? Or
yeah, let's do
it.
Hard,
huh? We already had the men introduce themselves.
If you would introduce yourself and tell me where you grew up and, if you want, how old you are.
Oh, yeah. I'm Vivian Ichiki. I was born at Lahaina Pump. There's no Lahaina Pump now. And I'm 78 years old. What else? I've been married for almost 58 years. December makes 58 years. Yeah, and I can tell you how I met my husband.
Okay, well, here, you need to get on my knees.
This is 58 years ago. He met me at this, now they call it a Kapalua, used to be Honolulu camp. There's no Honolulu camp now, but we used to go dancing a lot, and he met me there. And 1 year later, we got married.
What year was this?
1946, I got married. Yeah, and then 1 year later, we got married, and we lived at Honokawai. That's where he used to be. Right, George? And then we have 4 children, 8 grandchildren. What else?
Remember what music you were listening to when you were dancing?
Old music, so I don't remember.
What kind? What kind of dancing?
Those days? Regular Foxtrot. Yeah. And you know the funny part, and my sister and I just say twins, but we weren't twins. We used to wear same kind of style clothes, same material. My husband used to make mistake. He used to say, which one is Vivian, which one is Lillian? He used to make mistake. Yeah, but he married me.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Would you introduce yourself?
I'm Anita Yamafuji. I was born in Kuhua Village. That's right as you pass the mill. And I'm 76 years old. And I couldn't finish high school because, you know, my parents were they're poor, I guess. And so I started working. We used to have that Pioneer Mill Hospital. So I started working there. And then, you know, as I was walking home, you know, and my husband was, you know, driving bus for the school. So I met him at the corner of the store, and he said he'll pick me up on the bus. I said, no, thank you, you know. So I went home by myself, and then he started calling. So I began, you know, going with him. And then I got married in 1953. And then I lost him 22 years ago. And I have three grandsons. One is in Indiana. He just graduated last May. And another one is Northern Iowa. And he'll be graduating in May of next year. And the youngest one goes to King Kekaliki High School. And he's a basketball player.
So what was courtship like when you were, you know, dancing around and stuff? I mean...
Nothing.
I mean, you didn't go on dates or?
He used to come see me every weekend. You know what he used to do? Bring me fish. He used to go fishing weekends. So just to be nice to my parents, he used to bring fish, big red fish. And that's how he used to come see me every weekend, bring the big fish, and we got married.
He's a
fish. He's a
fish. Oh, no? Okay.
I'm
just wondering, how did your husband court you?
How did he? He used to own a restaurant, and he made the best noodle in town. And when I got married, I worked in the restaurant, you know, helping the restaurant. And in the meantime, I started working at the Maui Memorial Hospital as the LPN. So I worked from 3 to 11. So at 11 o'clock, I called him at home to have my siamin ready because I'm hungry after working. So he stayed up and waited for me to come home. And we had noodles together and then went to bed.
This is kind of unusual courtship rituals here in Hawaii. How did you court? I don't know. You want to tell me how you guys courted your wife?
No need.
No need?
I met my new wife here. We married 8 years now, May, and I was shopping in Nagasaki because you know, I cooked for my family because, you know, my first wife died, and I was living with my son and his five children and his wife. So I did all the cooking. I go shopping every day. I was Nagasaki shopping. I met the mother. The mother says, "Hi, George." I said, "Hi." I said, "You met my daughter?" I says, "No." So I told, you know, it's me. I made this and that. You know me, my mind. Well, would you like to go dinner tonight, May? No. I said, oh, no. So I go home and I think, if you first you don't succeed, you try again. So that was Saturday, I think. So Monday, I call her. I said, May, would you like to go dinner tonight? Well, okay. So, you know, she played hard to get. So I took went out dinner, and that was it. The mother had no chauffeur, no nothing. The mother got mad at me. She said, you know, you took my chauffeur away. Now she, you know, she can't go any place where she wants to go all the time. That's how I met me, and we've been married 8 years. Be happily married so far.
So, okay, I'm going to ask you this, and you guys, did boys and girls have sex before they were married?
No.
How come? What would happen if they did?
My parents used to say, never sleep together. Yeah, so we were clean. Yeah. Good girl and boy.
Were people chaperoned?
No. Yeah.
So nothing happened at the bathhouses?
No. We cannot have, because we all be together, so nothing can happen. Boys one side, girls one side, but you know, we have to be good girls.
Were the boys, did they have to be good boys?
Oh yeah, naturally.
I don't believe you.
I have to say something about Fred. You know, he and his wife shared the same bedroom since day one, the day they were born. They were in the same bedroom. Ask him why.
No. See, my wife was born January 17, and I was born January 22nd, the same year. So we were in the maternity ward when our parents gave birth to us. So that's what May said.
Well, so you knew each other growing up then, obviously.
Pardon me?
You knew each other when you were growing up.
Oh, yeah, we were living in the same camp, so we knew each other.
When did you know you were in love?
I don't know. Who knows, eh?
Did she?
When I was going to high school, I didn't have any girlfriend because those days, no more such thing as boyfriend, girlfriend. Everybody was friends, you know. Not like now, high school, well, freshman year, you get, hey, that's my girlfriend. Right? But not when nowadays. You talk to a girl, that's not your girlfriend, you know. It was real, no more relationship, just friends, yeah.
Clean friends.
What did you say?
Everybody was clean friends. Yeah,
go together swimming,
go up the mountain, hiking like that, you know. But nothing happened,
you know,
clean.
We used to stay at Pukuli, we used to play games at night, you know, hide and seek with all the girls and the boys, eh? Nothing happened. Just be friendly and have fun. That's what it was all about in those days. No such thing as my girlfriend or my boyfriend, you know.
Mm. You know, when I was growing up, I come from a family of nine, and I was the second oldest in the family. My dad was so smart, he just knew how to make his children. Girl, boy, girl, boy, girl, boy. Nine of us, okay? I was the oldest boy. So when my dad died, he said, everything is for George, for me. I'm the oldest boy. That was the, you know, Japanese old, like, you know, custom, you know, there. And none of my sisters and brothers said, you know, nowadays they take you to court and all, oh, fight for this, that, but those days were no more money, you know, a little bit, but what I did was, you know, because I had a motel business in Honokoai, I started off. I bought a property down there. When everybody told me I was crazy, I bought down by the beach, 1.2 acres, beautiful beach, was for my school teacher, Mrs. Jose. And even the judge from Lahaina said, George, I wouldn't pay the kind of money you pay. You're crazy, you buy that place. So I went home to my wife there. I said, everybody think we're crazy. What should we do? You know, oh, we just hang on and let's promise each other. Whatever happened to you or me, we keep it for our children, you know. And so when the hotel started coming up, all in Kanapali area, you know, a lot of people offer me probably $32,000. Oh, everybody tell me, sell them, George. There's lots of money. And people were selling. On Napili side, that's how Napili side, you know, they develop over there. And but I didn't sell. I said no, thank you. And the richest man in Japan, Omori, came and see me. Says, you know, I offer you 80,000. If somebody offer you more, let me know. So I said no, it's not for sale. And I tell my wife, it's a lot of money, but you know, we promised each other. Yes, we keep our promise until today. Yeah, she passed away already, but. That's how I developed my place, and that's why I had that place. So I gave all my sisters and brothers. They divide whatever money my dad left for me. A few, you know, don't get no more money, so a little bit they divide among each other. And when I sold my two-bedroom unit in Hale Mahina Resort, I'm leasing the place now. And I got, you know, pretty good income from that. I sold two units over there. So I gave all my sisters and brothers so much. So they all thanked me and said, oh, but we didn't know it was Santa Claus was in our family, you know, because they were happier. So I keep my family happy, and so we all, nine of us, we all happy together. We visit each other. We are a very happy family. And, but, you know, when I was going to school, you know, being the oldest boy, I had to go to work here. When I was 16 years old, I had to go to work. And and this guy was my idol, you know. He's a star from Pokoli, hey, all kind of athlete. And me, I like to play sports too, you know. So when I went freshman year, the coach Hogendon was in at that time, he said, you know, I was walking in with all the changing class, he comes and says, Fujiwara, I said, I look back, hey, the coach, yes, sir. He said, I want to see you down the ballpark this afternoon. I said, coach, I live in Honokoa, I cannot, you know, it's too far for me, you know, I cannot have a way home. Don't worry, I'll fix you up, get a transportation. So that day, I went down the ballpark, all the boys was running, training, track shoes, shorts, everything, and he helped me with my shoes and long pants, you know. He told me, run the 60 yards for Jawara with the boys. I said, okay, I roll my pants up, everything. So he said, okay, all right, go. I run, I beat all them. 60 yard record was 6'9" in the muscle, so 6'7" in the muscle, hold the record. I run up in 6'9", never even trained the first day, you know, because we're country boys, we run all around the place, yeah? So we're always in good shape, okay? So I went, so when I went back to school, you know, I had to, my dad wouldn't tell me, he was too proud to tell me that I had to leave school. My mom told me when my second year, when I was in, so I, the principal came see me, called me in the library, oh, you know, it was, what study hall, eh? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people study, all the kids, go in the back room. I said, oh, what I did, no wonder he gonna beat me up, because he was rough, you know, that principal, Rogers, you know. He's a Harvard, but all American, tackle, big, strong, and he beat up, dude, he can beat up the kid. The ball is this much, he give him licking and all. You can do those things. So I thought, oh, maybe he gonna beat me up, so I kind of keep away from him, you know. They sit down here, so I sat down, all the kids looking at me like, oh, what the hell he did now, you know. So he tell me, I hear you're pretty good at lake for your shit. You go to class, every teacher would, you know, help you. I said, oh yeah, that's so, but you know. And I was thinking why, you know, but I still remember her name, Mrs. Foster. You remember Mrs. Foster? She was built, this teacher, you know, was built. Oh, you know, big built, you know. So I was studying and trying to concentrate, and she came leaning on my shoulders, and her breast was right on my shoulder, and I felt, I kind of, you know, a young kid, I feel, oh, kind of shame, you know what I mean? And she didn't mean nothing, you know, she was trying to help me, you know. That was, oh, boy, I gotta tell the boys, hey, oh, boy, the good stuff happened to me today, what? you know, and then, one day when I have to leave school, and when Coach Hogan don't see me downtown, you know, with the best miler in the island, Tsutomu Ito, yeah, you remember? Mm-hmm. Alabe. Kilauea camp we used to live. He and I was riding a bike, and he saw me, the coach saw me. Said, with the world, but, said, come back to school. I said, I cannot, I gotta help my family. He says, you stay with me, my house. You go to school from my house. I said, coach, I can't do it. I said, you know, my family can't, gotta eat. So that's how I left school. I cannot go back to school, And when I went to Las Vegas, you know, we family got together, family reunion, and nowadays intermarriage, so blonde kid, blue eyes, but this is a Fujiwara, you know, it's my name, you know. Oh, they come, hi, you know, we want you to tell how you grew up. So I went up and tell all the family how we grew up, and I told them, you know, you kids are lucky today that you can go to school. As long as you can go to school now. Don't forget, because Grandpa George cannot go to school, and I could have been maybe, you know, somebody more important. I played the role, you know, meaning, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the coach never, Evans was coaching that time. He no believe, before they hit the line, I tackle him down. I was playing in left end, you know. I play offensive and defensive. And then I told all my family that, and today they all get scholarship going to school. This, you know, this try. So I thought, oh, that was good, you know. My sister tell me, oh, George, you know, it was good for telling the kids those things because, you know, they think, you know, no need education, but now they all get scholarships. So make me happy too, what I told them about that part of my life. Huh?
Can you describe what your home life was like? Like, was your family on
my
the plantation?
My home life was very, you know, my first wife and I, we run the business for 10 years.
When
I was
back up.
When you were growing up.
Growing up.
High school,
I was up.
If you can lean.
I was, what do you call a kind? Born at home.
Midwife.
Midwife baby I was, yeah. The old Baba San, we used to call his daughter, the model A, yeah? That small coop. She used to run up and down and go, you know. Anyway, I was born in Kilauea, and I was a very sick child. My older sister and I, the doctor says, no hope. And so my mom took me to that Inari Kamisama, the Buddhist Inari Kamisama. And he prayed, and that's the reason why I'm alive until today. And when I used to go to Honolulu, you know, there was an Inari Kamisama near the football stadium. That's the only place I can find. I went to look for that church because my mom said when I was 12 years old, go and pray, you know, because that's how you were saved. So I never forgot that. So when I grew up, I went down a hula bowl. And my friend Stanley Alama, he's a funny guy, you know. So we went down and looked for the church. Oh, this is the church. So. Well, those days, $5 was a lot of money, way back in the 40s. So I donated $5. And we're going, hey, that's not the church. The church, they look alike. Yeah, this is a wrong church. I gave the money. He told me, go back and take the money back and go. He's that kind of guy, you know. Oh, yeah, I used to get a lot of fun with him, you know. But anyway.
Well, I was wondering, can you describe what your house was like? And you said you had a big family. So
oh, my, yeah, big family. We didn't
have
plenty.
Hold on a second.
We live in a plantation house and
Hold on. Wait, Richard. Go ahead. You want to sit down? You okay? Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
describe your house and how you all live together.
Plantation house, yeah, we live, what do you call, the kind of house, you know, when the wind blows, the wind, you know, come right, the dust and everything come right through the wall, you know, yeah, because the house all termite eating and old, yeah. And then that's the reason why when I got married, I had to, you know, we cannot live in the house with all the kids, yeah? And my oldest sister, I remember her, you know, when she graduated eighth grade, she had to go to work, and she was 13 years old, and apparently she was very intelligent. The teacher would write a note, say, you know, this girl had to go to school because she's very intelligent. But she couldn't go to school, and she used to go to babysit. Once a month, she'll come home on the weekend. She get $3, paid $3. That's the only kind of job you can get before, yeah? She come home, give my mom $3. She go in the closet and cry until the next day that she got to go back, that the people will come and pick her up, go to work. It was so sad, you know? So I said, you know.
Did anybody go to college in your family?
College? No, none of us. We all, but... Like my sister and I work, and we send all my sisters and brothers to school, you know. So what, seven of them, yeah? They all graduate high school, yeah. But I went back to school when I was 34 years old, you know, because I had a wife that was registered nurse and everything, you know, electrician, no more education, this and that, you know. So.
Would you talk about, like, how big the house was?
How big? A three-bedroom house, and it's an old house, but...
And then what was the camp like? Can you describe the camp?
No way.
the camp that you lived in?
Kilauea Camp, right
can
up
there. Can you describe it for us? For people, this is radio, so they can't see anything. So what would, you know, what would the pictures be that you can tell us about the camp?
Kilauea Camp, he and I used to live in Nagamine and I, just a camp where they had a bathroom in the camp over there too, but we had our own, because I was living in the Hawaiian camp here. And we had our own bathroom my dad made, and we're 9 children, you know, walking down way down the other end. And so we had our own bathroom, all that, and the toilet in the house too. And
what kind of meals who cooked?
Meals? Oh, talk about meals. Yeah, so, you know, we raised chicken and vegetable, and we had on pig too, and when we killed chicken, I eat 10 bowls of rice because, you know, I could eat. You know the Japanese bowl rice? I eat 10 of that. If other than that, I eat 2 or 3 bowls because the food is junk, you know. It's all vegetable. If you get meat, you see one small meat like that, you have one of that, and you nibble on it, eat plenty of rice, nibble it, and vegetable, you know. That's all you eat. That's how I grew up. And I didn't know until today. No wonder I was healthy when I was growing up. I was not fat, you know. But there was a health food we were eating, yeah? Look at today, all the people that eat all that garbage they eat, and, you know, so.
Did you always have plenty of food, though?
We always had enough food. Mom always cooking enough food. We used to eat 100 pounds of rice one month. Every month, we buy 100 pounds of rice.
How about your parents' days? Did they always have enough food?
But one thing with my dad, when he come home from work, my mom would always serve him first. He sit on the end of the table, my mom sit on the other side, and she'll scoop all the rice and stuff. My dad not eat first, but he get the first bowl, and then go right down all around. My mom eat less. Sometimes she hardly have anything to eat, you know. Think about it now, kind of, you know. But at the time you were growing up, you're hungry. Who are you going to eat fast? Because, you know, we get 9 kids.
What about when your parents were growing up, or, you know, when their parents' time, did everybody have enough food then?
My parents?
Yeah, did they ever talk about if it was hard?
Those days we were poor, so everything was hard, you know. Nothing was easy. Mostly things were, you know, sometimes when I go fishing, I give my neighbor fish, they give me vegetable or something, the most exchange stuff, yeah, that's how we kind of grew up. And the camp, we're all like one family, you know. I mean, if you buy one car, I make a garage, next thing you know, the whole neighborhood will come and finish the garage in one day because there's so much help, yeah. That's how the camp people were all one big family before, yeah? Not today, though, but today everybody's so busy.
Your parents Issei? Your Nisei? Your parents immigrated?
Yeah.
So do you know why they came to Hawaii and what kind of work did they do when they got here? Did they come together or were they, did they immigrate together?
My dad came to Hawaii when he was 12 years old by himself. He got a contract with a sugar plantation. He came on a boat. He said 1 month took him, and he said a lot of people were dying and get sick because, you know, the ocean rough. They went to a big island, Hawaii, and then from there, they said the Maui plantation pioneer meal pay them better, so they stole away and came to Maui when he was young. He came 12 years old. He was working in a field, and he said, you know, you get your senior moments, yeah? You know, when you get to my age.
We'll take your senior moment. It's
yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, and then he worked for the sugar mill, in the mill, yeah, over there. And Pioneer Mill. And then when he was about 28 years old, he got a picture bride from, you know, it's my wife, my mom is a picture bride. My dad is a Hiroshima came. My mom is Okayama, but I guess somehow they were friends. So he looked at that picture, sent him over. And they were married forever. Not like today, you know, they think they love each other. One 2 year they divorced, but they were married until they passed away and raised 9 children.
Did your mom, was she surprised to see him? Sometimes you hear stories about
I don't know, about, you know, the picture being really old.
Yeah, do you know anything more about that process, about how they exchanged and what your mom was doing in Japan before she came over?
You know something? My dad, I wish I knew him more. All he did was go to work 30 days a month, 10 hours a day. I hardly know my dad. I know my mom better, because so that's the reason I don't know too much about my dad's life, you know. The only time when he's day off once a month, he and I go fishing, 10 o'clock at night. He used to work shift, yeah? So 10 o'clock at night, I wait for him, and he and I go fishing, and we catch opelu, mempachi, and, you know, for the family for 1 week, yeah? Fish, yeah? And that's how, you know, we survive, you know, fish and rice and vegetable. And that was good for us. We never know it. Oh, we like fish, you know. We like steak or, you know, chicken and stuff, pork chop, but, you know. And we couldn't afford it. Even camera. I don't have picture of myself when I was young because we couldn't afford camera. We're so poor. And I tell you one thing, too. This guy came and take a survey of about 2 years ago, Mayor. You know, who the school teacher, he was me. The Japanese boy came and said, oh, you know, I'm looking for everybody my age. And I write how I grew up, this and that. When he came to collect, and a month later he came back and said, George, I like your story the best. I said, why? I was the poorest kid in Lahaina. He looked and smiled, he said, you know, like kind of, you know, oh, you know, I was the poorest kid in Lahaina, eh? You know. So anyway.
I was just wondering about your mom. About being a picture bride. Did she ever talk to you about that?
My mom?
Yeah. You said you got to know your mom more, so did she ever tell you about what it was like for her to...
Even her, you know, I know her more than my dad, but, you know, she's busy raising all the children and got to wash clothes, you know. Those days we were washing ball and in the heat. So I helped her make the fire and stuff like that, yeah. And so we have a little bit of conversation, you know, but...
Was she surprised when she saw your dad? You know?
When she went?
Well, how did she choose to be a picture bride?
Picture bride. I guess, you know, she came and agreed. My dad was okay, I guess, so they got married. He was 28 and she was 18. They were 10 years apart.
Did she work, did she live in a farm area in Japan? Like, was she prepared
to
do...
Yeah, they were both farmers.
Oh, can you start again? They were both...
Oh, my dad used to say, oh, my grandpa was a big man. He was about 6 feet tall, big man, and very strong. And they used to carry, three bags of that rice on his shoulder and walk miles to go and sell, the rice, yeah. So one day he bought a horse, and then the horse kicked him in the stomach. He died then, you know. That was the end of the...
That's not funny.
Yeah.
I thought you carried the horse.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought you were going to punch the horse. But the horse kicked him in the stomach and he passed away. And my dad has very little story to tell me because I don't know her.
Somebody's phone?
Or me? No.
Maybe mine.
Is it your phone?
Yeah.
We're all hard of hearing.
Well, me too, I feel the vibration.
How your mom adjusted when she came? Was she prepared? Did she know what Hawaii was going to be like? Did she know that it was going to be...
No, she didn't know anything. She just came to Hawaii because, I guess, before the olden days, no more choice. Eh? The president tell you, go get married, go, you got to go. Eh? And, yeah. So, you know, having nine children, you don't know your parents too much, yeah? I'm the oldest, and I go to work when I got, you know, and she's raising the children at home, so I don't know.
That must have been really hard for her, though, nine children.
Yeah. And she used to make garden at home with carry a baby in the back, with, you know, they call it obi, yeah? Tie them in the back, and she's digging. I see that, and, you know, I used to come home from work, you know, I was 16, 17 years old. I said, oh, you know. Oh, mom, you know, let me dig. I used to go dig. And my dad, too, come home from work. You know, I'm tired, too, yeah? Come home from work, I see him sawing and chopping wood, the kiawe wood, to make the furo, eh? You know, the Japanese hot water and furo, taking a bath. And so I used to let him rest and, you know. I used to be a pretty good boy, I guess. I don't know.
Can you describe the kind of work that he living or the kind of working conditions he
no,
worked under?
You know what? You know, because I told you I did a lot of diving, I cannot hear too good, you're going to apologize.
Did he describe the kind of work that he did? Did he say, like, what kind of conditions he worked under? And did he ever complain about the kind of work?
Oh, yes. You know, dad come home tired and, you know, this and that. So he told me, George, when you grow up, I want you to be a tradesman, because that's the best paying job in the plantation. So that's the reason why I became an electrician.
What did your dad do?
My dad was a boiler man. He used to make steam, like Fred guys down here, you know, make steam for a generator operated by steam, yeah. So that's the kind of job he had. And after that, he get older, he was a janitor in the mill. Just, you know, and
One other thing, you were saying that you didn't have any photos of yourself when you were a child because you were too poor to have a camera. So how did your dad get the picture for the picture bride exchange?
I never even see their wedding picture, to tell you the true fact. You know, we couldn't afford a camera them days. You know, I told you I was the poorest kid in Atlanta, so you can imagine. My family was
How did your
poor.
Dad get a picture?
My dad what?
He had to get a picture to send.
I don't know much about my parents.
I'm just wondering how they, all the men, if they couldn't afford the camera, they must have paid somebody, don't you think?
I think so too. They must have had, but maybe.
But you never saw that picture?
I never see them. Oh, I think I saw once a black and white picture way back. You know, talking about almost 100 years ago, you know. So, you know what I mean? Yeah, I saw them, yeah. They had one picture. And I don't know what happened to the picture.
What did it look like?
Oh, he was, you know, young. And